Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen's been raining off my cup. Pink via deckables to see Kalein fire them to up. Gate me canes a flint. The drop.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold, and I have a new knee. I have a new knee. It was so funny because last time I got my, I know I told you this, but last time, 11 years ago when I got my other knee done, they had female knees and male knees, and now they've changed the name to standard and narrow. But I still got the male one because I'm a big girl. So right now I'm in a shitload of pain. Thank God for Oxy. I only take a little with Tylenol. I also am really swollen and really uncomfortable, but I am up and doing my PT and my exercises and walking around and icing and complaining. And I hate being dependent on anyone. Elisa is the greatest. Okay, so Elisa, who is nursing me back to health, she kept saying, oh, I need to go back to my apartment. I need to go back to my apartment. And I was like, oh God, all she wants to do is get away from me. That's all she wants to do. So finally, my neighbor came over for a couple hours and Elisa went back to her apartment and she comes back wearing a nurse's uniform, a green nurse's uniform, Hoka's, and speaking in a loud accent that didn't make any sense. And it was, and then she went out in the drawer and got my stethoscope and put it around her neck. And it was the fucking most hilarious. I mean, I gotta say, she's got an amazing sense of humor and it was fucking hilarious. But my concern was that she bought the outfit, the nurse's outfit, thinking it was like a nice regular outfit. That's, yeah. But she bought a fucking nurse's uniform. How funny is that? And she wanted it to be ready for when I got out of the hospital. But of course it wasn't. So... but it was really funny. And she wears it. She likes it. She looks cute. She's a hot nurse, baby. And she's an overnight nurse. That's right. So anyway, that was really funny. Thanksgiving was great. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. I did fall asleep, but I did some cooking, but I did fall asleep on the couch in the middle of it. But you know what? Too fucking bad. Henry and Ben were there and it was great. My sister and my niece and my brother-in-law, and then my sister and brother-in-law's niece, who lives in Tel Aviv and has a great restaurant there. She was visiting, and it was just really nice. It was a really nice, delicious meal. And then I took drugs and passed out. So that was my Thanksgiving. I do want to say that I am extremely, extremely thankful for the hostages that have been released. I do worry about the hostages that are still there. I also want to make the point that for every one child or baby, or actually I haven't been any infants, but a woman, a grandmother who has been released, there have been three Palestinian felons or they're prisoners because they committed a crime or were caught committing crime. And so we are, you know, we're getting back our innocent people who were sleeping in bed by giving back three of the people who were violent towards Israelis. So that's what we got to do to get these people back. But it is Hamas is a terrorist organization and no one wants Palestinian children to suffer or any children anywhere to suffer. We don't want that. No one wants that. But this is what we have to do to get our innocent people who were sleeping back. We have to give away or trade three of their felons, their prisoners. And by the way, one of whom was in a trade years ago with Shalit, the Israeli soldier who was released for 1,027 Palestinian prisoners. And one of those prisoners who, while he was in prison, got brain surgery at an Israeli hospital and a Jewish doctor saved his life. He was the mastermind behind October 7th. So, you know what? I gotta say, we love our children, and this whole situation sucks. And the anti-Semitism sucks, and the willful ignorance, and the people showing up and protesting. Where were they during, you know, the Ukraine war? There's so many real genocides that happen and these people have never showed interest. So it's a really interesting and awful and proud time to be a Jew right now. So there's a lot of mixed feelings there, but you know, we can never relax. You think you got a generation here, a generation there where it was like, oh, okay, they're over it. You know, we're doing okay. But it never ends. It never goes away. And it fucking sucks. So there you have it. I also want to say, as a Jew, I love our guest this week, Zeynep Johnson. She is a Muslim, grew up a devout Muslim in Harlem. She's so fucking talented. She's so fucking gorgeous and funny. And it's really annoying. Like I told her multiple times that, you know, it's not right. People should not get to be like really smart, really athletic, really talented, and beautiful. Like you should have to be a little bit not attractive. You know, the fact that like there's all these like professional athletes who are also really hot and, you know, talented actors or musicians or, you know, most comedians are not the hottest, but Zeynep is, but whatever. But it's not fair. It is not fair that you get to be good looking too. You know what I'm saying? So that was annoying. I really think that you shouldn't get everything. It's fucking, you know, whatever. But she's awesome. Her life story is really interesting. And she has a new special out. And she's, you know, it was just fun because I love her. And I love, you know, like, yeah, I love bumping into the girls at the club. And Zeynep is just, I don't really love bumping into her because I feel fat and ugly, but Her new special, He Jabs Off, is great. And, you know, she's a sister. She's a sister in comedy, and I love her. So I hope I had enough energy for this intro, because I am about to go put ice on my knee and lay on the couch, the usual, and read. But you get to do whatever you're doing, drive, work out on the treadmill, whatever you're doing. I hope that you you also sit back and relax and enjoy part one of my interview with the one and only Zainab Johnson. I'm very excited for our guest today. First of all, not only is she hilarious, she's also incredibly beautiful. And it's really annoying, because the problem is, you know, when you're funny and beautiful, it's like, this is what I equate it to, you know, like big star athlete quarterbacks who are also really good looking. Like you can't get everything. Here's the other thing. She's also really smart. So the whole package is really fucking annoying. And I'm going to have to figure out what I can say to her without feeling like shit about myself. Ladies and gentlemen, and they, them, Zainab Johnson is here. Zainab Johnson. Woo.
Hey, Judy.
Zainab.
Hey.
I haven't seen you in forever. And remember over the pandemic, we did the Drew Barrymore show?
Yes. That was like the first thing I did via, like, you know, big thing via Zoom. Yes.
Right. I always say via Zoom, and then I make fun of myself. I love that you say via.
Yeah, why do you make fun of yourself? Via is great.
I know, I love via. And you know what I miss? The via rideshare cars they used to have in New York. Remember via?
No, sorry.
You don't remember before the pandemic, you could get a via, and it was like a cab, but they picked up other people along the way, and it was way cheaper? Okay, whatever, Zainab.
No, but you... Judy, you know I live in LA.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I know you left New York. We're going to get all into your life. Let me just, I'm just only focusing on you right now. And I don't know how to hide myself. And okay, it's really annoying having to look at you anyway. But Zainab, are you enjoying Los Angeles?
Yeah, I mean, I just got back. I was actually in New York this morning and I just got back here. So I'm happy to be home. I like Los Angeles. It's so sunny and warm.
Did you take the red eye?
No, I took an early flight this morning. I left JFK at 7 a.m.
Oh, nice. I can't do the red eye anymore. I'm too old. Like I can't.
Really?
Yeah, I can't recover from it. I used to like take the red eye, go home, like take a nap, and then, you know, wake up at noon and I was fine. Not anymore. It's like it takes me days and days to recover. But you'll experience that soon enough, Zainab. Okay.
I love the red eye. I love it. No babies. No, I love it. Everybody just wanting to go to sleep as soon as the wheels take off.
Yeah,
I love
it. I always have the babies on it no matter what. But okay, so let's start with your life, because I find that you have a very interesting life that would not culminate in you being a stand-up comedian. So you were born in Brooklyn. You grew up in Harlem.
Yeah.
You're one of 13 children. 13.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That is a lot of children. And let's also say from the same parents.
Yep.
They are devout Muslims, or were devout Muslims. I know your father is no longer with us. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So you know, what I find so interesting, and I've, you know, read a lot about you and listened to interviews, is the fact, and I say this because my kids grew up in New York City, that even though you are in this bastion of culture and, you know, art and all of this life experience and all these different kinds of people, you can still be sheltered.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially as a kid. It's like here's the thing. I was sheltered and not sheltered all at the same time. Like in terms of having a social life, in terms of socializing outside of like my immediate family and maybe the masjid, you know, I didn't really experience much of New York like without them, right?
Right.
But when I went to school, like from very early, probably like about second grade, I was getting on the bus, the city bus,
right,
from Harlem, traveling all the way downtown Manhattan to go to school. So, I mean, in a way, there's like this, you know, sheltered lifestyle, but then in a way, there's like this sort of scary amount of freedom.
Yeah, it's like you develop these street smarts, and then when you walked into your home, it was a whole different vibe. That's what it sounds like. What, you know, when I hear you speak. First of all, which number are you of the 13?
I'm fifth from the top.
Oh my God, you're right in the middle. You're right in the middle. How is
that? Yeah.
So, I mean, I got to ask a million questions about, I mean, 13 kids. How many kids slept in your bedroom?
At one time, probably, I remember four. It was me. So I grew up in when it was all of us, by the time it was all 13 of us, we lived in a 5-bedroom apartment in Harlem.
No way.
And yeah, large apartment. But I mean, even still, it's not big enough. Because, you know, once you get older, the older kids kind of need their privacy.
Right.
And so the younger kids kind of get like lumped together. I remember we had bunk beds in the hallway.
Right.
So maybe when I was about 16 is when I got my own room. Like that was the age that you become where you, it's like now you need your own room. But right. Before that, I shared a room with my three younger sisters.
So, and how many girls, how many boys?
6 girls, 7 boys.
Oh my God.
And yeah. One set of twins.
Now, do you feel like you got enough attention from your parents? One-on-one attention?
You know what? I can't really remember, but I don't feel deprived.
Right,
either.
Right.
You know, like I feel like my mom, I have very clear memories of my mom doing everything that she could do to get me into like gifted and talented programs, to get me into summer programs, to, you know, I don't know, give me opportunity. Like she worked really hard to find free opportunities that were impactful because we couldn't afford the paid opportunity.
Right.
You know, but I don't ever remember. I remember it being too much.
Right.
I remember getting too much attention. Like right. There's no quiet. I think as a kid, I felt like, you know, like an old father, like if I could just go sit in the bathroom
right,
for 20
right,
minutes
right.
and have my alone time, you know?
So can you name every one of them?
Of course I can.
Okay. Go.
You want me to do it?
Yes. I'm Walida. Fascinated by this.
Walida, Nubia, Waleed, Abdul Halim, Zainab, Abdul Warid, Muammar, Abdul Wahid, Muhammad, Misra Sultana, Muslima, Jibril.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, I could have gave you their first names, last names, middle names, birth dates. Like I know everybody.
Oh my God. So you're all really close.
Yeah, I think that there's clusters, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that, you know, the older brothers are close. The younger brothers are close. The younger sisters are their own little unit. I would say that I am one of the siblings that has a really good relationship with everybody.
I bet.
But it's not
because you're
like,
the comedian.
It's not always. Yeah, and I think I'm also, like, the diplomat.
Right.
I am the,
but that's what we do.
You know?
Yeah, that's what we do. We yeah. disarm people. We are the disarmers. Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV. And I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration. That it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome. So can you tell me what dinner time was like? Like, I'm sorry that I'm harping on this, but this is so fascinating to me. What was dinner like? And I can't imagine being the mother of 13, her poor vagina too.
I always say that on stage. I'm like, whenever the crowd is like, oh, I'm like, I know her vagina, right? Like, it's the first thing we all think of. That poor vagina. And you know, my mom had all natural births.
Oh God. She better be doing her Kegels. So, what was dinner time? Like, all right. So you got up. At what age did you have, was she like, all right, I can't get you ready for school. It's like up to you. I got the little ones here.
Oh, that was very early. Probably like, I don't know, third or fourth grade, like elementary school, definitely. But I mean, I didn't have that much to choose from. My mom used to get our clothes sewn and I really actually hated it because she would go to the fabric district and buy the sale fabric. So she would have 40 yards of the same fabric. And
so you're all wearing the same pattern?
We're not all wearing the same pattern. She would buy a different pattern for like me. Like I'd have a different pattern than my sister.
Right.
But I would go to school and everybody would think it was the same outfit because everything is the same pattern.
Right.
And I hated it.
Right. My mother made my own clothes. I didn't have clothes in my size and she would make all our clothes and the kids would make fun of me. So, okay. So you'd get up, was there breakfast? Like I can't,
it was so chaotic, Judy. It was so chaotic. I can't, like, no, I will tell you this. I don't ever remember having a dining room table.
Wow.
Growing up as a kid.
Wow.
Sitting at a dining room table was something that I did when I went to my grandmother's house.
Okay.
Or like a rich friend's house or a friend that was the only kid, you know? But I never had that growing up. I don't remember. I mean, we ate breakfast. My mom was like, it was the type of house where my mom would make a big pot of oatmeal. And then it's on the stove. And it's up to you to serve yourself.
Right.
You know, once you became big enough to serve yourself, you serve yourself. And she made what she made. And if you didn't eat it, my father would say, well, I guess you're not that hungry, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't,
old school. It was almost so old school.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't ever remember having enough plate. I don't ever remember having enough silverware. You know, it was kind of like, oh, you know, dinner's ready. Then you better hurry up and get what you can get. And we would all like, just sit down, like, maybe in the what was considered the dining room or like the kitchen or even a living room, we'd all just sit on the floor, like in our backs against the wall. You know what I'm saying? And like still very communal style, but not definitely not around a table. Like that's just not something that we had. And then you'd be waiting. Like I might be sitting there eating, and then I'd have like one of my brothers waiting, like, hurry up with the fork. You know, like,
right.
we never had enough.
Wow. So you really had to, everyone had to fend for themselves.
Yes. If you were not like a baby or a toddler, yes, you had to fend for yourself.
What did your father do for a living?
He worked for the MTA for a very large part of my childhood, the majority of it. He worked for the MTA. He was a token booth clerk.
Wow. Wow, we don't have those anymore.
We don't, right?
Yeah, ooh. I mean, there's maybe sometimes a person there to, you know, help, but that's it.
Yeah.
And your mother did she work outside of the house? I mean, there's no fucking way. There's no fucking way. Did they want all of these children? I mean, was this like,
Judy, my mom wanted 20.
Oh my God.
She wanted 20. She made it to 13. Right. But then I think my mom had my youngest brother when she was either 44 or 46. Right. And I remember after that, like I think as much as she was ambitious to go after 20, I think she felt like my youngest brother, like, okay, that's enough for her. Right. But then at some point after him, maybe when he was about 6 or 7 years old. So now at that point, she's like in her very early 50s. Right. Or at least like 50 years old.
Right.
My father is on her trying again.
No way.
Like trying. Yes. And my mom was like,
no, I can't.
Like, I mean, yeah, I can't. This is, I cannot.
Please, I can't. I'm peeing right now while we are talking to me. I can't. So what an interesting way to grow up. So I feel like, I mean, I'm thinking home for you is it's such a different thing than it would be for anyone else who didn't, you know, what is home? Like, I feel like you would be so flexible and able to be around a lot of people and negotiate and navigate because of this existence that you grew up in. And yet, do you value your alone time?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely can be around a lot of people. But yeah, I most times like to be alone. And I am most times after I'm around a lot of people, I'm exhausted.
Oh, right. It is. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm super exhausted. But I do find like whenever there's like, you know, whenever there's an opportunity to like socialize or fellowship or whatever, I'm always like, I'll come to you. I'll come to you. I'll come to you. Because I just want to be able to leave when I want to be able to leave.
Right.
I don't ever, I try my best to not make it so that I have to ask people to leave my space.
Right. But you know,
I'm like,
are you okay with asking people to leave your space? I mean, I'll have people over and I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm like so blunt. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm tired. Bye now.
I feel like I am blunt. I mean, I'm getting soft as I get older. I'm getting really soft. I'm realizing it. But I am blunt. But I had these two people come to my house. Like, they were like close acquaintances. And it didn't matter what I said, Judy, they would not leave. I was like, okay, guys, well, this was fun.
Oh, my God. That's so fucking annoying. That is so fucking annoying.
Judy, this is when I was in an apartment. I was in a one-bedroom apartment.
Oh.
I got a water out the kitchen, a snack. I grabbed my laptop and went in my bedroom. And I was like, okay, you guys, I'm going to take a nap. So just make sure you lock up.
Oh my God. You know. Are you kidding? Are you fucking, and they stayed?
I came back out. They were on the couch under the blanket. Just like, how was your nap?
Oh my God. Get the fuck out of my house. You fucking assholes. Okay. So you grew up very, very religious, very observant Muslims, and a lot of your community outside the house was based on that, you know. And I mean, you went to school, you went to public school, and you saw. I mean, it's just interesting that you saw the way other people who had a brother or a sister and, you know, these small families and who were very assimilated went about their lives. And yet you are in a public school, taking public transportation, fending for yourself, and then part of this whole other community, which I think is so, probably makes you, you know, so it gives you so many dimensions. I mean, I know that as a Jew, that I went to public school, and then my parents were very observant, and you know, I had this whole other side of my life that I didn't share with my non-Jewish friends, you know? So I know that when I heard you speak that you always observed Ramadan, and then in high school, when you were 16 or something, I heard you say something about when you got into high school, you were like, you know what? I don't know how much of this I want to do. But then you went back, which I think is common.
So like when I was in elementary school, I didn't want to talk about it. Like, I don't think that's something that I shared with any of my classmates, because I had like two, it's like there weren't a lot of Black kids in the school with me. And I was also Black and like a Muslim girl who wore hijab, you know? And so I was easily identifiable. And so I didn't share it, but it was obvious. It's like every, you know, a couple of times a week, someone would pull my kimar off my head,
Yeah. You know?
And so that was my existence in elementary school, as much as I was still a cool kid. Like, I was really a cool kid.
Duh,
I
had a look lot at of you. Friends yeah. in school.
But, you know, there was always that one kid that was curious and mean. And like, I got to see, I don't know if she has hair or not. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do this every week to you. But every Friday, my mom would come and take us out of school to take us to Juma service. That happened all throughout my elementary education. But then when I got to middle school, which for me was 5th through 8th grade, she stopped doing that. Like, I was still covering up, but she stopped, she stopped coming to pick me up. You know, at that point, I'm like, right. You know, I'm, you know, early adolescent, and she's like letting me find my way, but still my father's very adamant about how I'm leaving the house, what I look like, what my extracurriculars are. I had finally got friends and had a little bit of independence, you know? At that point, I was probably like leaving the house one way and then borrowing some of my friends' clothes and changing in the elevator and like looking completely different, you know, in school and then changing when I got back home. But then in high school, I started playing basketball.
Right.
I started playing basketball the summer. I started playing basketball in middle school, but I mean, it really got serious the summer before I went to high school. I joined the AAU team.
This was like my everyday.
I woke up and like from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I was playing basketball.
Do you know my son is captain of his college team?
Really?
Yeah. And he's getting recruited to play professionally in Israel, sadly.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, not sadly, I'm so proud of him. I'm just sad about what's going on in Israel, but, so I'm an AAU basketball mom, so I totally get it. But how did you get to the games? I mean, I'm sure your parents couldn't drive you to all these, tournaments and stuff.
The train, Judy.
Wow.
I would be going all the way up. I would be going to the Polo Grounds. I would be going to Dykeman. I would be going to the Bronx. I play for Riverside.
Oh, Riverside. Yes. Yeah. What a great team. Yeah.
Yes. I would be walking places. You know, there's like other girls on the team. It's like, we may have lived in like neighborhoods that were not too far away. So it's like, okay, we're going to meet up again, and then we're going to continue going. I played in Brooklyn. But it's like, yeah, you know, you even see the kids on the trains and buses now today, especially in the summertime with their sports gear on, their basketball gear on, and their AAU backpack.
Right.
And it's like, that's their lot. You know, that was like my life. But I remember when I got to high school, I really became like a cool kid, like a TV show cool kid.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I needed to look the part. I needed to act the part. I'm now very much interested in boys.
Right.
Like, you know, I can't be all of this cover up, all of this, you know what I'm saying, covering my hair and covering my arms and my legs. Like, I don't know that. I don't know who that's for.
It's not. It's not for me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not for me. You know, at 14, 15, 16, it's like, no, this is not for me, right? And so I remember my father, he wasn't too, I didn't have to really convince him to stop showing my hair. Cause it's like, I mean, that makes sense to me, you know, like hair is not that big of a deal in my opinion. Like, you know, you shouldn't really be turned on by seeing somebody's hair. I don't know. That's how I feel. But he was still very strict when it came to how I was covering up. And I remember I remember saying, you know, like, I'm playing basketball now, you know, this is a big part of my life. And really like selling it to him, like, you know, I'm going to try and get a scholarship, but right. in order, you know, this is the trajectory, but I can't get there with these restrictions.
Right.
You know, so I need you to like, let up. It's so funny, Judy. I remember we played my high school team. We played against this other team. I can't remember. Maybe it was like Randolph High School or something like that. And there was a hijabi girl playing basketball. She was fully covered up. She had on leggings. She
oh,
was fully
God. Yeah.
And my father was like, well, I see there's a way.
Oh, God, that's hilarious.
And I was like, but look, she's not very good. She's right. not very good.
And she's sweating. But I don't know if you could tell. She's spitzing like, yeah. Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome. You know, you had a double whammy there. You're Black and you're Muslim. Which one? I mean, it's hard enough being Black, you know? And yeah, then you add this religion that people really don't understand. And have all these preconceived notions about, which was the one you felt, if there was one that you felt you had to navigate more, defend more, or, you know, teach people about more. Which was the one that you felt more separated from these fucking idiots?
Definitely being Black, because I think that that's like something, you know, I mean, I've been Black like all my life. And like when I was fully, like when I was a very easily identifiable Muslim, like meaning I was fully covered, right? It's like I'm a kid, so I don't even really understand it enough to explain it or defend it either. I'm really just at this point following instructions. I'm obeying my parents. Like, this is what we do. This is what they said we do. And this is what I'm doing. Right. And like, I can't really tell you anything I except for that. I could tell you like the things that I know. I could tell you I don't eat pork. I could tell you that I pray 5 times a day. I could tell you why I'm leaving school on Friday and a half day. But other than that, I can't really defend anything. And you know, and kids, they're not really asking you to do that. They're just, you know, I'm a kid like in the 90s. Right. And so they're like asking you, they're just like, do you have hair? That's the biggest thing for them. Do you have
hair?
They're
just curious.
You know, but beyond that, like I said, you know, once I was like 14, 15, I'm no longer covering up,
right?
But it's like, I'm still a Black girl, you know? And I don't remember feeling heavily discriminated against. I have to be honest. Like, I was born in Brooklyn. I spent the first 5 years of my life there. And then I came to Harlem, which is very, you know, Black familial community.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm only around, you know, I'm only around a bunch of non-Black kids when I'm at school during the day. But then it's like, we all, I realized this in retrospect, like, first of all, I went to school with a bunch of Jewish kids, which makes sense if I'm in school downtown Manhattan, right?
Right. That's the Jew bar, by the way.
And I realized it a couple of days ago. I realized it. it's so funny because it's like we're all just kids really trying to, like, you know, Evan is getting teased for his yarmulke too. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
You know? And then the new thing is like, oh, we thought this was just like a regular smart Black kid, but he can't come to none of the birthday parties at school. Why is that? Oh, he's Jehovah's Witness.
His witness.
I felt like we were all just like here, you know, just young kids trying to figure out what our parents had gotten us into.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, the similarities between Judaism and the Muslim religion is it's so similar. It's the same. It's really very, very parallel. I hope that wasn't a really ridiculous question, but I always, that showing your religion so outwardly like that and being Black, like, I can't imagine. You know,
I think I defend, interestingly enough, Judy, I think I defend myself more being a Muslim woman that does not cover up. And I am constantly expressing how proud I am to be Muslim.
Right.
I think that I have to defend that more, you know, and there's a lot of, I didn't experience this when I was a kid, but now being out in the world, I do know that there's a lot of like racism within Islam, you know, sometimes I get, I mean, not ever in person, but definitely on it via the internet, you know, there goes via.
Oh, please,
You know, definitely by way of the internet, I get a lot of like, you don't have any right to our faith, you know,
which I think is the most foolish thing. Right. It's like being gay and being an observant Jew. It's like, I can be both. I can do both.
Yeah.
And I'm doing both.
Yeah.
And you're not the fucking boss of the religion.
Yeah. You know, I have a joke about like, it's 13 of us and I'm trying to figure out, like, there's such a variety, but we trying to figure out who the gay kid is, right? Because it's just statistically.
Are there any? I know, there's no gays.
Not that we know of.
What
you know?
The fuck? But that's not right. They're, like, you should have 1.3 that are gay.
We should listen. We got the numbers. We definitely got the numbers. And so I remember saying it on stage in like Minnesota somewhere, which has a
such
very
a good,
large
good premise. Yeah.
There's such a large Muslim Somali community.
Right.
And this guy came up to me, this Somali man came up to me after the show. He said, "Can I talk to you?" And I'm like, "Sure, sure. Thank you for coming to the show." He's like, "You were so great." He was like, "But you said that you think your brother might be the gay one?" And I said, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, we don't know, but I'm just being funny." Yeah. Like, you know, he was like, "But you're Muslim." I said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's up?"
Oh, and he said, "God.
Well, you think your brother's the gay one?" I said, "Oh yeah." I'm slowly getting where this is going.
Right.
You know? I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "That's not possible."
Oh my God. Possible. Shut the fuck up. Shut up, you fucking idiot. Oh God. And you know what? He was gay. Guaranteed. Okay. So you got into sports. You were a cheerleader.
Where'd you get that from?
You said it. You said you were a cheerleader on a podcast. You go, "No, I was a cheerleader. I was into sports." Okay. I wrote it down. I swear to God, you said it. And
I don't remember that.
All right. I'm going to send it to you. You then go to CCNY, the City College of New York. Okay. Everyone listen to this now. She gets a bachelor's degree in math. What the fuck? Are you kidding me? Like,
math and education.
I know.
Math and education. Because I wanted to teach high school. And in order to teach high school, you have to get an education. You got to do a double math.
To be a high school math teacher, what would you have taught? Because you did teach for a while, right?
I did teach for a little while. What did you teach? I taught math, but I didn't teach in a high school. But if I was teaching in a high school, what grade would I want to teach?
Like, do you know calculus?
I don't know if I would... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I'm not a...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, calculus. Of course, sure.
But I realized I was out of practice because my nephew was asking me for help with his trig homework.
I really did well on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had to really brush up on sine, cosine. Yeah. I really had to brush up on it.
I fucking hated it. So, I mean, I come from a math family and I hated it. I can't believe you were a STEM girl.
Yeah. But you know, that's how I got. When I was younger, that's how I got into every gifted and talented program. That's how my mom got me into these better educational situations. She would take me down to the district. I think I was in district 3 schools. She would take me down to the district.
Yeah, my kid's same. Yeah.
Yeah. And the test kept coming back. She's in 99 percentile for math. She's in 97 percentile for reading. And my mom, once I got in, she was like, "Okay, I got another kid. Let's test him too." You know, because it's almost, it's not legacy, but they're almost like, once they're working with the parent, it's like,
and
okay,
they see,
who's
yeah.
the next kid? Who's, yeah, you know? And it really did, it really did help some of my siblings that came after me. I have another brother right now who is in Philly and he's an engineer, and he was the same way. He went through the exact same test, exact same programs, exact same elementary system, everything.
Yeah, my
that
kids
I did.
Did the same and thing. Yeah.
Funny enough, him and I are a lot alike.
Wow. Oh my God. So, all right. So you taught math and your father dies suddenly.
Yeah.
And you find out, so your father dies suddenly and you have this epiphany of, what am I doing? You know, my friend's moving to LA. She's going to be a star. I want to be a star.
Yes. So it didn't happen quite like that. So the epiphany came when I was actually in a classroom. I was in a classroom, like I said, I was in a fifth grade classroom, and these kids were smart. It was like a magnet, but also I want to say charter school, their parents were very involved. Like you could tell these parents were like, I can't afford private school, but I'm going to do the best to get my kid.
Don't you think that parents in public and charter schools are way more involved than parents in private schools?
I don't know, because I don't know parents in private schools, but yeah. I think I saw both. Like I've been through parent-teacher conferences and stuff, and you do want the parent, or at least I did. I wanted the parent, even if I had a complaint, to always advocate for their kid.
Yeah, of course.
You want to know that's there, even if it's a thorn in your ass.
And that's what your mother did.
Oh yeah, my mother definitely. My mother, I mean, she couldn't have a job. How could she? She had kids and
police. That is a job. That is a full time. That's beyond full time. Yeah, exactly.
But wait, you asked.
So you had this epiphany. You said you were teaching fifth graders.
Oh, I was teaching. I was teaching, and they were great. You know, normally, like, the epiphany comes when shit hits the fan. They were great. I remember that day so specifically. Like, wow, I could probably leave the classroom and they wouldn't even know it. Like, they're so invested in, like, their work. They're so, like, you know, well behaved and, you know, whatever. And I was just standing there with, like, this complete silence, and I was like, oh, but I don't think I'm supposed to be a teacher. So I had that epiphany in that moment, right? Wow. Now, my father had already, you know, that was unfortunate. My father had passed away the summer before I had this, you know, whatever. And my friend had finished, she had graduated, and she had graduated from an engineering school, but she was into, like, spoken word and music and all of that. And she was like, you know, Zainab, I think she had been auditioning in New York for stuff, you know, and she was like, I think I'm going to move to LA. We used to go to LA in college, like during spring breaks, we would go and have fun and, you know, and so she was like, I think I'm going to move to LA. And I was like, oh man, for what? She was like, cause I want to be famous. I got to go to LA, right? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And this is going to parlay into this. And I was like, damn, I can't let her be famous without me. Like, that was a legitimate thought, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't really know all the famous people I know. I don't really know their best friend, you know?
Right.
But also, I think the thing that allowed me to do it, you know, like, you're talking and you're like, oh, girl, okay, I'll join you. Let me finish out this year and then I'll come join you.
Right.
The thing that put the fire under my butt was that my father had died.
Right, of course.
And so I felt...
Yeah.
I felt like time was of the essence. I felt like, dang, I don't know what, you know, Allah has planned for me. I don't know how long my life will be.
Right. It really does change you. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to have any regret. You know, I do not want to live my life with regret. And that was that gave me the courage to, you know, pick up everything in my little Harlem apartment and pack up my little BMW and drive to Los Angeles, California.
And another prophetic moment was your mother told you that your father wanted to be a comedian, that you had no idea.
Yeah, and she just said it so casually. I think that's the area which her and I are a lot alike. Like, my friends tell me that all the time. Like, Zainab, you're like a time release capsule. Like, out of nowhere, you just release this heavy information about your life casually with no explanation. And my mom does the same thing. Like, out of nowhere, we were just sitting in her house in the living room one day. The rare moments where I get to have 100%
with your mom.
That's very rare, right? Now that we're getting older and older, it's a little bit more common, you know, but at that time it wasn't. And when I first started seeing that, and she was like, you know, your father would be really proud of you. And I was like, would he? And she was like, yeah, you know, he always wanted to be a comedian. I was floored when she said it. I was floored. Judy,
was he funny?
No. Like, he's funny to me, like, as a character, because I'm taking this serious, this guy who's so serious and so sort of, like, unreasonable at
times,
you know, with his strictness, I can take that and make it a funny character. But when I was a kid, I don't ever remember thinking, like, God, he's so much fun.
Right.
But I do remember, like, laughing with him. But I don't remember feeling like my father is so funny, but I also don't remember feeling like I was a very funny individual either. But people from my past tell me all the time, I'm not surprised. Like, this is what you was always supposed to, you was always so funny in school. And I'm like, what?
That's the best. Not knowing, because then you have an ego. Thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with Zainab Johnson. How fucking great is she? And she's really good looking. Okay? I mean, I don't want to say that, but it's like fucking annoying. Like, most funny people are not the most attractive. I mean, well, Lucy was attractive. There are really fun, or they hide their attractiveness. You know, it's just, it's secondary. But no, not this one. Gorgeous, tall, fucking smart. Yeah. Anyway. Part two is awesome too, and her special Hijabs Off is available now on Prime Video. Get it, listen to it. We need comedy. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, marketed, edited. Well, she is. It's not edited by Brittany, but she does do all the clips and everything, which means she has to listen to the whole fucking episode. I'm sure she wants to kill herself, but whatever. So that's Brittany Jose Howard's Richmond. And I do have gigs coming up. We do have a live podcast. We did not get to talk to Modi long enough, and so we decided let's finish it with a live podcast, which will be at the Midnight Theater on December 12th in New York City. Tickets are going really, really fast. But it's at 7 p.m. and it's going to be sold out, and it's going to be a great conversation. And someone's going to help me up on the stage. So that's that. Listen to me on Beyond Sandyland this week with Sandy Bernhard. Yep, on her radio show, which is my favorite, Sandyland. That's on Thursday. I'm doing a benefit on December 6th, if I can walk, the Laurie Beachman Theater. Hanukkah's coming up. A lot of stuff going on, but I want to tell you that on December 16th at the South Orange Performing Arts Center in New Jersey, I will be with Liz Glazer and John Fish, both favorite guests on the podcast. We are doing a Jewy Jew show at South Orange Performing Arts Center. It is going to be I swear to God, it's going to be such a fucking great show. So do not miss that. That's on December 16th at 8 p.m. in South Orange, New Jersey, which is my home state. Yeah, the Garden State is my home state. On Christmas Day, December 25th, I will be at Stand Up New York for a Very Judy Christmas, J-E-W-D-Y, and that will be with a lot of other Jews, and that will be a great fucking show. So I'm going to get back into it, getting on that stage. I don't like being off the stage for a very long time, but, you know, those are my dates coming up. I'm praying for more hostages, hopefully, by the next time part two of Zainab it lands or posts or whatever the fuck it's called. We'll have even more, hopefully all of them out. So bring them home. And I pray for peace. Peace, 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 peace. That's what we need. And stop the fucking anti-Semitism and read a goddamn book and do your due diligence. And I'm going to go take some Oxy. What do you think of that? Huh? I'm going to fall asleep to my Barbra Streisand book that Elisa got me for my birthday. That's right. I can't believe anyone's still listening, but the book is really good. Really good. And I'm kind of enjoying having time to read and not have to, you know, run around. It's kind of nice, but the pain sucks. Anyway, that's all I got to say. I want to thank you all for listening. As we always, always say, first of all, I love you. Thank you for being, you know, thank you for just, you know, listening. I mean, really, thank you for being fans of the podcast. I appreciate it so much because, as you know, I lose money on it. But I love talking, as you can see. But thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful week. Peace, 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 baby. And as we always say, so long.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega convenience stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.